Stop the hammering. Stop the hammering out there. Who's got a hammer? Where is it? Where's the hammer?
Compelling insights, unpredictable conversations, encouragement for your day. It's the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio.
Cyrus, I never did get an answer to that question. Where is the hammer?
Where is it? Where's the hammer? Is it on the... Go up on the other floor. Somebody go up there and stop the hammering. Stop the hammering.
Can I get an amen?
Amen and a woman.
Amen and a woman. That's right. Welcome back. This is the Patrick Madrid Show. Hour 2 just starting right now. 888-914-9149. An amazing story. This carried by the National Catholic Register. The world's most premature baby just celebrated his first birthday. This is an unbelievable tale. True story. The mom is Beth Hutchinson. She gave birth to her little baby boy when she was only 5 months pregnant. The baby, William Hutchinson, came into the world weighing 11 ounces, the smallest, most premature baby on record in the world. His mother, Beth, was only 20 weeks pregnant. The tiny baby was given a 0% chance of survival. His dad, Rick Hutchinson, said that his son is truly a miracle given what every doctor told them when he was born. When Richard was born, his dad said, they told us he had a 0% chance of survival, and they asked us if we wanted to hold him before he passed away. And after consulting with the neonatologist department there, they agreed to give him a chance. And look, he just turned a year old. Fast forward to this month, baby Richard, now this is referring to baby Richard Scott, who was born in the Minneapolis Hospital NICU unit on June 6th of 2020. That little baby, when he, they said that his first birthday, now weighing a whopping 16 pounds, also born at 20 weeks of gestation. He's now in the Guinness Book of World Records as the record holder. So a couple examples of little babies who were born very, very early, too early. And in days gone by, of course, if a child were to be born that early, without question, the baby would die. You know, I have a personal reflection on this story, and this is why it was so touching for me to see that this, these little babies have made it. Before we had the kind of technology that we have now, medically speaking, they never would have made it if they were born that premature. But in my own case, I have two grandsons who were born premature. One, he was born 3 months premature. His brother, who came along a year later or so, he was born about 6 weeks premature. So he was in less danger than his older brother was. But I remember going to the NICU unit. I didn't even know what a NICU unit was until this grandson of mine was born 3 months premature. He was a tiny little thing. Not quite as little as the boys that I just mentioned to you from this article, but he looked to me about the size of a little breakfast burrito. You know, you could practically hold him in the palm of your hand. And the amazing array of technology that we have available now to keep these little babies alive, they're born way before they should be, and they would otherwise die. So the nutrients and the being kept warm and all the other things that go into it that I can't even fully fathom, it was really a beautiful thing to watch. It was sad because for 3 months he had to live in the NICU, and his mom and dad would... You know, my son and my daughter-in-law, they were there constantly. They would take turns, and they would spend hours and hours there and, you know, talking to him and touching him through the latex gloves that you could extend into the incubator. All of these things, and maybe it's not called an incubator, but the warmer where they keep the little babies warm, like in these plexiglass enclosures to keep them safe. And every time Nancy and I would go to visit, we would notice that he would get a little bit bigger and a little bit bigger. And eventually he was able to come home. And as with any premature child, there's always that risk of maybe being more prone to infections or other problems. But man, this kid is a horse now. How old is he? He's close to 13 years old, if he's not already. My wife can not only tell you how old the grandkids are, she could tell you the day on which they were born, the birthday, the time of day. She knows all those details. I'm afraid I don't. But I do marvel. at the ability to keep these children alive this way. And it just goes to show that we live in a very blessed time. Cyrus, I was talking to one of my daughters yesterday, as a matter of fact. I mentioned that I'm grateful to be living in the era of Advil and air conditioning, especially on the 90-degree humid days. I bet you enjoy that, don't you, when you have some air conditioning?
I love it. Air conditioning is new to my world, and I can't imagine going back.
I didn't have air conditioning, or my family didn't have air conditioning, till around the time, when would it have been? Probably around the time I graduated from high school. Now, partly that's because we were living in beautiful Southern California, and the community where we lived was about, I suppose, maybe 10 miles or so from the beach, or give or take. So we had, I think, kind of a naturally more temperate climate. But
and now
we
never had
air conditioning.
It's always 72 and snacky.
Well, you know, it's just weird when you look back on it how much, at least I do, I rely on air conditioning. And in the car and such. And I don't think we had air conditioning. I don't think I ever experienced air conditioning in a car until about the time that I graduated from high school. And that was when I think my parents got a new van or something like that. It was around that time. And it had air conditioning, which was a novelty for me anyway.
Yeah, that's a big deal.
Let's take this just one step further.
All right.
Think about this, okay. In all of human history, and we've talked about this before, but it's worthy of touching upon it again briefly. In all of human history, who knows how many thousands of years humans have been on this planet? So, well, I don't know. Let's say that it's 50,000 years. I don't know. Whatever it is. This is the first generation of all of human history to have things like NICUs, where premature babies can be nursed to full health. We have anesthesia. Oh my gosh, can you imagine back in the olden days, you broke your leg, you dislocated your shoulder.
Yep. They give you some whiskey and a stick to bite on.
Right. Here, bite on this. Or what about an infected tooth that had to come out? Just imagine all the thousands of years of human misery. And just dealing with it, you deal with the heat, you deal with the cold, you deal with the humidity, you deal with, you have a headache, too bad. You have an upset stomach, too bad. Is your appendix exploding? Well, nice knowing you. And you didn't have any of those amenities, and now look at what we've got. It's just astonishing to me, and I thank God for it. I mean, you know, why should we enjoy all these benefits and not the people who came before us? I mean, that's a question only God can answer. But I'm often reminded, Cyrus, especially when it comes to these things, as Jesus said, to whom much has been given, much will be required. Now, I don't think he had air conditioning in mind.
No, but, probably not.
But, you know, I just feel like we have been so blessed. So blessed.
Yeah, that is such an important thing to remember. And I'm sitting here complaining about little, like, my Wi-Fi is slow.
Yeah,
in my temperature controlled room,
you know, right?
My fridge full of snacks, and things are okay.
I remember hearing a comedian. This must have been maybe 10 or 12 years ago. He was talking about how he was taking a transcontinental flight on a commercial airliner, and the guy next to him was upset because the Wi-Fi on board the airplane was out. And he says, this guy's upset that he's missing out on something that didn't even exist like last month. And he's upset about it. And then he says, think about this. He says, just stop and think. You're flying. You're flying. And I think the best line of it was, he says, you're sitting in a chair in the sky with a ginger ale in your hand, breathing air, traveling 500 or 600 miles an hour in the sky. He says, you know, just stop and imagine what this means. And the guy's angry because the Wi-Fi was out.
That's exactly right.
Yeah. Well, I just, these little things, they make me feel all the more blessed and all the more responsible. You know, to whom much has been given, much will be required. Let's go to Teresa in DeSoto, Texas. Hi, Teresa. Welcome.
Good morning, Patrick.
Good morning.
I was going to make a comment about the lady who called in about the head covering.
Yeah.
Because I remember listening to your show when you mentioned that you thought that replacing the holy water replacing the hand sanitizer with the holy water was a great idea. And so along those lines, it made me think that what if the ladies now replaced the face covering with a head covering as a sign of who we're putting our trust in now.
Yeah.
And I'm struggling like this lady because I don't want to make a political statement about it and have people, you know, ask me why or, you know, but still, I think it would be a fun witness. We all had matching masks with our outfits, and I just think that we're wearing, we used to call them mantillas,
yeah.
But just as a sign of trust and, you know, a sign of healing from the mask. What do you think?
I see your point. And do I detect correctly that there's a little tongue-in-cheek in what you're saying? Kind of to make a point.
Yes and no. Okay. I don't really want to make light of it or you know, banana boo boo about it. But I guess it would be to me personally an excuse to start wearing the mantilla. Mm-hmm. You know, rationalize it. It was my tradition growing up, and there are a few ladies in my church who do so. It's just a thought I was having.
I would love, now this is just my personal opinion, I would love to see this custom come back, and I always appreciate it when I see women of any age wearing a veil when they go to Mass. But I mean, I point out, of course, that it's not required anymore by the church. But I think it's a beautiful custom. Now, I'm wondering, how would people know to make that connection if they saw you wearing the chapel veil or the mantilla? How would they know that you were, in a sense, making a statement about no longer wearing the mask because your trust is in God as opposed to a mask? What would signal to them that that was your meaning?
Well, I would probably just keep it between myself and my close group of friends.
I see.
And my husband, we talked about it this morning, and I asked him his thoughts, and he said he thought it would be lovely, and he just wouldn't object to it. So,
yeah.
Anyway, it's just a little thought that just to put it out there and see what ladies think.
That's interesting. Yeah. So we'll have to, maybe Cyrus, you can put a poll on Twitter, perhaps, saying Catholic women, do you, or it could, I suppose, be for anybody. Do you think the custom of women wearing chapel veils to Mass should return or not? That might be an interesting poll. See what people think about that. I think all the traditional Catholics are going to say yes. I would guess probably a lot of the Catholics who don't really associate with the traditional Latin Mass, or maybe they're not even familiar with it, to them it might seem like a non-issue. I don't know. It'd be interesting to see. Well, Teresa, thank you. I appreciate that. And if time permits, I will see if I can find a little bit of detail on what that custom was all about and how it fell into disuse at the time of the Second Vatican Council. I appreciate that. 888-914-9149. A few more details I want to share with you. Governor Newsom, who is up for a recall election because of the bungling that he has done in his administration, he's actually drawing new fire because he is signing a bill. Well, let me just share this with you from the Daily Wire. This is from Hank Berrien. On Monday of this week, Democratic legislators, who dominate the California legislature, passed a bill called SB 152 that will allow them to move up the recall election of Democratic Governor Gavin Newsom, galvanizing GOP legislators who have accused him of cheating in order to ensure that the recall effort fails. Now, he signed the bill the day that it was passed. I see this as a conflict of interest, personally. Assemblyman Kevin Kiley says the conclusion is inescapable, that Gavin Newsom is cheating in the recall and this legislature is his willing accomplice. GOP Assemblyman Vince Fong echoed, saying it is an attempt to put a thumb on the scale and to try to obtain a partisan outcome for one side. UC California Berkeley political science professor Jack Citrin said they're trying to create a situation that is most favorable for the partisan outcome that they favor. Democrats in this move would permit the recall election to take place at least 30 days earlier than under existing state law. They hope to take advantage of what they view as a favorable condition for Newsom as the state moves on from the worst days of the pandemic and related restrictions. The Associated Press reported, adding, recall organizers collected 1.7 million signatures in support of recalling Newsom, and he'll face an election later this year. Without the recall, he'd face voters in 2022 for a regularly scheduled election. This bill that was just signed into law by Governor Newsom allows Democrats to circumvent the legislative review process if legislators target funds for counties to pay for the cost of the election. The State Department of Finance already sought a cost estimate from counties, and lawmakers plan to approve $215 million to cover the local expense. In 2017, California Democrats changed the recall rules in order to protect State Senator Josh Newman from a similar recall effort. But Newman was not involved in the effort. Kylie, who was quoted a moment ago, says the bare minimum level of decency exhibited by Senator Josh Newman is way too much to ask of Governor Newsom. We have the unprecedented circumstances where Governor Gavin Newsom, with a stroke of a pen, will be changing California law in order to try to beat back his own recall. That was according to the Sacramento Bee. So, you know, political tricks. That's what's going on here. That's what it looks like. People are saying this is a big conflict of interest. Now, let's talk about the 4th of July coming up here. It's interesting. The New York Post has got an article about the attitudes that Americans have with regard to gathering for the 4th of July. A poll shows that at least half of Americans feel that the July 4th gatherings that are being considered are too risky. More than three quarters of Americans still feel that there is still some risk from COVID-19 in attending 4th of July celebrations, with 4 in 10 believing that the threat is moderate to high, according to this poll. Some 77% of respondents in an Axios Ipsos poll ranked the celebrations as posing at least a small risk, with less than a quarter, or 23%, maintaining there is no risk at all. Now, it's interesting as you look at this along party lines. Democrats, according to the Axios Ipsos poll, Democrats are by far the most fearful, with more than half, or 52%, still believing Independence Day events carry a high or moderate risk, whereas only 25% of Republicans who were polled fear that there is a high or moderate risk. Combined, more than three quarters of Republicans believe the events carry either no risk or maybe just a small risk, something shared by less than half of Democrats. Despite mask mandates being dropped in many states across the U.S., more than half, 55% of those polled said that they're still wearing masks all or some of the time when they leave home. That is the lowest share since April of last year. 14% of those polled said that they believe they may have been previously infected with the coronavirus but never got tested, which would make 1 in 5 Americans having either tested positive or thinking that they had COVID-19. That same untested group are also statistically more likely not to want to get vaccinated, that according to the poll. Some people, the Ipsos pollster and senior vice president Chris Jackson said, some people are essentially thinking, well, I don't have to have it because I already have immunity. But we don't know if they had it, and we don't know if they have immunity. Now, that would be in the case of those who never got tested. They think they might have gotten it, but they don't really know. You know, that's a gamble, because you really need to get tested, it seems to me, to find out whether or not you had it. Now, if you had it and you were tested and it was a true positive result and you really did have COVID, then yes, you do have immunity. How long that lasts, I don't know. Last little tidbit here, then we're going to take a break. 84% of the more than 1,000 adults polled said that they had heard of the new Delta variant of the virus, with 72% say they're concerned about it. That, too, was split along party lines. 52% of Democrats saying they were very concerned by the Delta variant, compared to just 18% of the Republicans who were polled as well. So there you have it. People's opinions don't really matter one way or the other, but it is interesting to see the trends in how their opinions shape public policy. 888-914-9149 is the number. We'll go back to your phone calls right after this. If you want to send me a message on Twitter, you'll find me at Patrick Madrid. I'll be right back.
It's the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio. Join the conversation at 888-914-9149. Patrick Madrid is on now.
We are back. Just a little bit more on the COVID thing. You might wonder how the Amish have dealt with this. The Pennsylvania Amish, the Ohio Amish, areas where the Amish folks live and work, they have had their problems with COVID. They've had the virus sweep through their churches and homes. This is according to an article in the Associated Press. But they are very resistant to getting a vaccine. Now, they're not, by religious reasons, opposed to getting a vaccine. They just tend to be very wary about that. There were efforts underway to get them more vaccinated early on. The AP says they posted flyers at farm supply stores and at auctions where the Amish sell handmade furniture and quilts. They sought advice from members of this religious conservative sect. They told them not to be pushy. They asked three newspapers that are widely read by the Amish in one particular county in Pennsylvania to publish ads promoting the vaccine. Two of them refused to do so. One did. By May, two rural vaccination clinics had opened at a fire station and social services center, both familiar places to the Amish in Lancaster County. During the first 6 weeks, 400 people showed up, but only 12 were Amish. The vaccination drive is lagging far behind in many Amish communities across the U.S. following a wave of the virus outbreaks. And they give some examples of where this took place. But they said just 14% of the county's overall population is fully vaccinated, and it's predominantly Amish. They're not forbidden to get vaccines. They just tend not to do that. Many think that they don't need the COVID-19 vaccine now because they've already gotten sick, and they believe their communities have reached herd immunity, according to healthcare providers in Ohio and Pennsylvania. And this would encompass, including parts of Indiana, about 345,000 Amish folks. And that's the number one reason we hear, according to Alice Yoder, executive director of the Community Health Center at Penn Medicine Lancaster General Health, a network of hospitals and clinics. Basically, since so many of them have had it, they recognize that they have an immunity to it. And so this is another reason for them to be just not really interested in getting the vaccine. So I find it fascinating to see how COVID has affected communities like that, which don't have the internet. They don't have news constant wall to wall. They don't have the drumbeat of all these things. And they reacted to the problem differently, and they seem to be doing okay. 888-914-9149. Let's go to Laura in Atlanta. Good morning, Laura.
Good morning, Patrick. I'm so anxious to get your advice on this.
Sure.
So long story short, my stepdaughter, who is 33, was in a long-term relationship with a guy, and he wouldn't commit to marriage, so she broke that off and followed her twin sister down the road of being a lesbian. So we've been praying about that and, just trying to, they live out of town, so it's some conversation back and forth. But last week, she announced on Father's Day that she got married to another woman. And so we're just kind of blown away, my husband, of course, especially. And I just would love to know advice from you on how to, where to go. We have the book Return and are reading it, and it's so far it has great information in it. But he's just really stumped as to how to even talk about it without, creating a defense problem or whatever.
Right. Yeah.
This
is becoming more and more common. This would have been a rare kind of thing, say, 20 years ago, but it's becoming more and more common. And I think the reason for that, Laura, I'll just offer you this little thought. I think the reason is because the more it is mainstreamed and normalized and glamorized and promoted, the more people who are curious are saying, well, I'm going to experiment. I'm going to give that a try and see what happens. So, you have my sympathy. Sometimes people will challenge me and they'll say, well, if it was your daughter or your son, what would you do? And I think they sort of expect me to have a double standard and to say, well, I would treat them differently. No, I would. It would be the same even if it were a son or daughter of mine. I pray that never happens, but my advice to you would be simply what I would take. I mean, I would try to take my own advice, and that would be simply love her, let her know you love her, and always have that compassion and that love for her as Jesus always did for the sinner. But Jesus right. admonished the sinner. And so thinking of the woman caught in adultery, obviously it takes two to tango. So there was another party involved, and he seemed to have gotten off scot-free. Maybe he was there when Jesus was drawing in the sand and they were about to stone this woman. And they asked Jesus, well, what should we do? And, you know, which of you, let the one of you, let he who among you who is without sin cast the first stone. I mean, the perfect response. And as you know the story, they all dropped the rocks and they walked away and she was not stoned. But notice what Jesus says. He says, go and sin no more. You're forgiven, but go and sin no more. So Jesus loves us sinners. He's compassionate to us. He's long-suffering. He's patient with us. And yet he still says, don't do that. So I think that's the only and really the best advice I could give in this difficult situation would be to love her and let her know that you love her. Let her know that you support her. Make opportunities, if it's possible, to show that to her in a more concrete way. But at the same time, don't go along to get along and don't pretend, not that you would, but I'm just offering this advice, don't pretend that everything is okay when it's really not. So even something like going to the quote-unquote wedding. I mean, somebody might say, well, if that was your daughter, would you go? No, I wouldn't go. I would tell her, honey, I love you with all my heart. There's nothing you can do to make me stop loving you. I'll always love you, and I'll always accept you. But I can't accept all of your decisions, and this is one of them, because it's bad for you. So I would propose that approach. And you know, if she should say, well, you have to accept me, what I would say is, no, you have to accept me. Mm-hmm. Why do I have to accept you for how you are, but you won't accept me for how I am?
Right.
You know, yeah. don't you believe in yeah. diversity? Don't you believe in tolerance? Well, yeah, of course mm-hmm. I do. She might say and say, okay, well, you know, tolerance means I'm not going to do anything to stop you. I'm not going to try to prevent you from living your life. That's up to you. Eventually, like all the rest of us, you're going to have to give an account to God for your life. And I can't change that. I can't run your life for you. But the same is true. You can't run my life. And if you really believe in diversity and tolerance, then please be tolerant of me.
Right. Yeah, that's big. That's so true. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I guess in our talking, that's kind of what we've said. You know, mm-hmm. they did announce, she did say they were going to have a wedding party. You know, we both said, well, you know, we just have to let her know, yes, we love you, but we can't go and support that event.
Right.
So that's good. And I did not mention one other thing to your call screener. Can I ask you one other question?
Yeah. Yeah. Go ahead.
Okay. So this happened several years ago, but this seems to run rampant in my family in different ways. My stepson is married to a wonderful woman whose brother is now married to a man, okay. and they have adopted two children, and the Catholic Church has baptized them. And I'm confused as to why. I want to understand, and I don't have the relationship to ask them right out to say, how is this possible?
Right.
Does that make sense to you?
It does.
Okay.
We live in let me rephrase that. It makes sense to me in terms of I understand it. I understand what you're saying,
uh-huh.
but it would not be, well, I'll put it this way. We live in a time, as you, I'm sure, already know, Laura, where a lot of strange things are happening in the church, a lot of very contradictory and confusing and ambiguous and strange things are going on in the church. And I don't know how to account for it. I just acknowledge that they're taking place. So if you run across a situation like this one that you have, where there's no effort made on the part of the priest, I guess, to counsel people to turn away from a life of sin, to live the life that the Catholic Church calls us to, life seeking holiness. It is scandalous when that kind of thing happens. It doesn't represent the actual, I don't think anyway, the actual teaching of the church, but it probably represents the attitudes that a given priest might have, okay? Just like lay people have their attitudes. So all I can do is tell you that there are some in the church who view this as not a problem. This is like super okay. And they'll even try to celebrate it and promote it. And all I can say is we know what Jesus taught. We know what the church has always taught. If we just stay faithful to the perennial teachings of the church, stay faithful to what Jesus said, then we'll be okay. And if other people do other things, then that's between them and God. And they'll have to answer right. for those things in due time. In the meantime, we just keep our heads down. We keep going forward, speaking the truth in love.
Yeah.
And not get too worked up, because there's not much that you can yeah. do about that, you know.
Oh, true. And in my heart, I want those children to be baptized, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, I want that for them. So in my heart and my head, I was like, well, I get that part. But, you know, the other part just... But I guess I'm really not supposed to get all of it. Just, you know, like you said,
yeah.
come from love and lots of prayer.
And you notice one thing, too, Laura. You and I and people like us, I guess, we not just talk about love, but we really do try to put it into practice. You know, you try mm-hmm. to be compassionate. You try to be respectful. You try to be all of those things. But notice what will happen if you disagree with them. They very often, anyway, quickly become hostile, abusive, vitriolic, it seems, you know, the respect and, you know, being magnanimous, it seems to be a one-way street very often. And
yes.
you typically no. don't get that in response from that side mm-hmm. of the equation. And that's
right.
telling, isn't it?
Right. Oh, yeah. I agree. Yeah, truly. It mm-hmm. is. Well, thank you for
your
thoughts and your wisdom. And I do have to tell you, I just love your show and
thank you.
Your books, and so you've helped in so many ways. So thank you for your ministry.
Thank
it's
you,
beautiful.
Laura. God bless you. I appreciate that. And so glad to know that you're listening. That means a lot. 888-914-9149. Thank you, Laura. I think we can do another phone call. So let's do that before the break. Brian in Milwaukee, welcome to the program.
Hello, my name is Brian, and the situation I'm in is that in Milwaukee, Mayor Barrett has signed a bill a few months back mm-hmm. that makes psychiatric therapy for homosexuals illegal. And as a Catholic that has a problem with same-sex attraction, I find that crippling, and I feel it's a violation of my civil right to full psychiatric treatment.
Let me make sure I understand, Brian, because I was unfamiliar with this. Are you saying that there's a new law in the state of Wisconsin that prohibits gay people from receiving psychiatric counseling? I've never heard of such a thing.
Okay, it's not in the state of Wisconsin exactly. It's in Milwaukee.
Okay.
And it was signed by the mayor, Mayor Barrett.
Okay.
And I had tried, because I am in psychotherapy, and
okay.
I have been for years. In fact, I'm on Social Security disability for mental illness.
Okay.
And every time I said, could I have therapy for my homosexuality, I have been told,
I see.
No. It's
I
illegal
see.
Now to offer that, and
I
we don't
see.
Believe it's a mental illness.
You're talking about what's commonly called reparative therapy, right? Where you try to
right.
overcome.
Well, the okay. mayor, yes, the mayor, didn't mean to interrupt you, but the mayor said on television recently that among his greatest accomplishments was a law against conversion therapy. That's what he called it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Which
what
is the same as reparative therapy.
What a kook. We have the same kookiness in California and other places where they have made it illegal now to do that. Well, I mean, there are ways around that. If you wanted to have counseling from a Catholic priest who can assist you with this, that, of course, is protected. They can't outlaw that. I agree with you. It is an infringement on your civil rights. If this is a treatment that you seek, it's certainly legitimate, even though the people on the other side would say, no, it's not legitimate. Nonetheless, it is. You have the right to do that. Now, I realize it's a burden for you, but what if you were to just get beyond the city limits of Milwaukee and get that therapy that you need from somebody who's not constrained by this kooky law? Is that a possibility?
Well, unfortunately, because I live on Social Security disability for mental illness, I can't travel outside of Milwaukee. I mean, I live on a check-to-check basis, except for those stimulus checks that came in.
Okay.
So I can't move. I live in subsidized housing, for example, and I would not be able to have any housing if I moved out of Milwaukee.
I see.
I personally would love to be able to sue in public. I wouldn't mind saying who I am and everything, and sue in public to get that law off the books.
Well, I don't know what the legal...
I don't know how to go about getting that help.
I don't either. Here's one thing you might want to do. There is an organization, if you jot this down, I'll look this up for you. It's called the Thomas More Law Center, and I will get their address for you. So the Thomas More Law Center is a Catholic organization of lawyers, and they take up, and I can't speak for them, of course, but they take up cases like this, often pro bono. Their website is thomasmore.org, and their subtitle is The Sword and Shield for People. The mission, where I had it here just a second ago, the mission of the Thomas More Law Center is to preserve America's Judeo-Christian heritage, defend the religious freedom of Christians, etc. So maybe contact them at thomasmore.org. Now, there's another organization that comes to mind as well, and that is the Alliance Defending Freedom. Their website is adflegal.org. They're headquartered in California. Now, I don't know what their requirements are for, like, where they would try to help with a case. I don't know if it's restricted just to California. I just don't know. But those are two places that are set up to help people in similar situations. And even if they can't help you, they may be able to refer you to yet another organization who might do that.
I have a question about that. Because I am so poor, honestly, mm-hmm. I am, although I'm not complaining about it, I don't have a computer, so I can't go online and go to those websites.
You could go to a public library. Is that within reach for you?
They're closed here for the most part. I mean, they're open in a way, but the restrictions are very severe. You have to make appointments, and it's very hard to get in to use a computer at the library. Even before the pandemic, it was hard to get to use the computers in the library.
I see.
And you're restricted to about 15 minutes at a time. And I honestly don't know how to operate a computer. I'm 59 years old. I'm rather technophobic. I just wouldn't even know what to do.
Got it. Well, how about this then? Why don't I give you a phone number for the Thomas More Law Center? Do you have a pen handy?
Okay, yes, I do.
Okay. So their phone number is 734-827.
734-827-2001.
So that's they're headquartered in...
734-827-2001.
Right. And they're headquartered in Ann Arbor, Michigan. So that would be my advice, Brian. Excuse me. Give them a call. Let them know the situation. Maybe they can help you. If they can't, I'm pretty confident they would find a way to refer you to an organization who could help you. I don't know what happened. I swallowed the wrong way. Sorry about that. Well, Brian, you have my immense sympathy and empathy. Hang in there. And maybe if you could, give me a call back a little bit down the road and let me know how things turn out, okay? I'd like to know. We care about you, and we're glad you're listening. Thank you. Be right back. Notre Dame Federal Credit Union is a member of the Catholic Credit Unions of America. You can find more information and your local Catholic Credit Union at relevantradio.com/banking.
This is the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio. Get connected to the conversation. Call now, 888-914-9149. That's 888-914-9149. Patrick Madrid is on now. Relevant Radio.
Man, I feel like I'm back in the 70s. The Patrick Madrid Show, 1975.
Well, you got the right mustache for it.
Yeah. Yeah, just being mistaken for Tom Selleck, you know. Just think how tiring that must be.
I wouldn't know.
Yeah, I know. Hey, and by the way, thanks to a friend of mine who pointed this out to me. I didn't know this update to a story that I shared with you yesterday. Remember the Kentucky, what was he? He was a police officer who was off duty, and he went early in the morning, 6 a.m, and he went in front of an abortion clinic and he prayed the rosary quietly, nonviolently, obviously, but he was in his uniform, although his uniform was covered up by a coat. Nonetheless, he was in uniform, and I think he went to work shortly after that was over. Well, he got put on administrative leave because, you know, how dare he go in front of an abortion clinic and pray? Well, there's an update. And this is from the Daily Wire. So thank you, friend, for texting me this information. A Louisville, Kentucky abortion clinic lashed out after Louisville's police department announced that one of its officers will return to work and not be disciplined any further for praying outside the abortion clinic. It's time for LMPD to take the public safety risks on the sidewalk seriously, follow the law, and do their job to ensure safety, not encourage more harm to Louisville residents and all who come here for care, according to Dr. Ernest Marshall and Ona Marshall, owners of the EMW Women's Surgical Center. Abortionists, let's call it what it is. The abortion clinic's owners also accused pro-life demonstrators of making noises. Oh, my gosh, they were making noises.
Come on, man.
Let me hear that noise again.
Come on, man.
Come on, man.
Come on, man.
Come on, man.
What are we talking about?
We're talking about abortion clinics. The abortion clinic's owners also accused pro-life protesters. Yeah, this is good. We need the mood music for abortions and abortion clinics. Just to get you into the mood to talk about abortion. Yeah. It's perfect. So the pro-life protesters, the abortion clinic's owners are just furious because the pro-life protesters were making noise. What does that mean? I think it means they were probably praying.
Sorry, it's not funny. I shouldn't be laughing, but
it's funny though. That's funny. It's ridiculous.
Yeah.
Boy, just imagine if we brought our sound effects.
Now
what
we
would they
can
do?
We can make some noise.
Could you imagine play the abortion theme song, and let's imagine that we were playing that through loudspeakers. Yeah. And just put that on a loop.
Get that in your spirit.
Put that on a loop, Cyrus. Let's have like a 10-hour long version of that. But we'd have to figure out what the laws are, you know, so that we could be X number of 100 feet away safely, you know, according to the law. I don't know if there's a law against playing that kind of music. It'd be interesting. Anyway, so they're complaining about the people outside the clinic. They said they're making noise. Et cetera, and they're mad that the police officer is not going to be held accountable.
Ain't nothing going to happen.
They said not holding this officer accountable for breaches of policy does not instill public confidence in LMPD for any citizen or situation in the Louisville community. So they're all about safety, I guess, except for the little unborn babies that come into their clinic alive and they go out the other door dead. I mean, they don't care about their safety. In a June 15th letter to the officer, Louisville Metro Police Chief Erica Shields, declined to discipline him any further, citing the fact that he had tried to cover up his uniform at the clinic and noting that the LMPD does not consistently enforce rules related to police participating in protests or similar activities. In the early hours of Saturday, February 20th, the officer drove to the abortion clinic and joined his father in praying the rosary outside. The clinic was not performing abortions that day, according to the officer's lawyer. A picture of the officer showing him carrying his firearm near an LMPD cruiser was posted on a Twitter account run by volunteer escorts of the clinic. He was off duty, but wearing his uniform with a coat over. These are details that I shared with you yesterday or the day before. So he was there before 6 a.m. He got out, he put on his jacket, and he stood there with another person outside the clinic for about 45 minutes praying. He also held a sign that said, "Pray to end abortion." Shortly after he started his regular patrol duty that morning, the officer was ordered to return to his division's office and placed on administrative leave with pay, meaning he was prohibited from making arrests, et cetera, et cetera. And, oh, look, the Thomas More Society, which represents the officer, said that they discovered through an open records request to LMPD that the department did not take any disciplinary action against other officers who were on duty and uniformed when they marched with Black Lives Matter protesters and also in LGBT parades. They have no grounds at all to even discipline him, Matt Heffron, senior counsel at the Thomas More Society, told the Daily Wire. Heffron criticized the LMPD for letting the procedure drag on as a form of implicit punishment and suggested the department could be politically motivated. "They have implicitly punished him for praying," Heffron said. "Why would you do that to a loyal officer who's never had any discipline problems and has gotten several commendations?" In March, the abortion clinic said in a statement that, quote, "the officer engaged in political activity while in uniform and carrying his service weapon on a main thoroughfare in downtown Louisville. This conduct undermines public trust and confidence in LMPD and intimidates patients and care providers," end quote. Last month, the Louisville City Council approved legislation to allow abortion clinics to enforce a 10-foot buffer zone outside the entrance as a foil to pro-life protesters attempting to approach a person entering or leaving the clinic. So that's happening. Now he's back at work, and that's good. He's not going to have any further harassment or punishment, and I am happy to see that. 888-914-9149. We'll go to Jovita in Sunnyvale, California. Hi, Jovita.
Good morning. Patrick, can you help me with, I'm on a dilemma.
Okay. Yeah, what's up?
I have a friend. She's Christian, and her husband is Catholic.
Okay.
But he is not a practice Catholic.
Okay.
And I've known her since, like 7 years.
Mm-hmm.
And we help each other here and there. And then she called me and she says, "Oh, can you do me a favor?" I said, "Sure." She goes, "Can you baptize my kids? Can you be the God, the Nina, you know?"
Yeah, she's asking you to do that?
She's asking me if I can be the godmother of her three kids. One of them is 12. The other ones are 3 and 1.
Have any of them been baptized yet?
None.
Okay.
And I'm like, I'm happy that you want to baptize them, but if I do that, if she's going to, because I did talk to her for a while, and I go, "Are you going to, commit yourself to raise them Catholic?"
Mm-hmm, right.
I don't want to baptize them and be there and promise that I'm going to help you with that, and then you're going to go and not take them to mass, mm-hmm. not, continue with education on the Catholic.
Right.
And I go, "Because you're the one who..."
What did she say?
"Always." And then she was silent. And she say, I asked her, "Can you talk to your husband and, go over if you guys really want to do this? Because let's say I don't have an issue just to stand there and say yes, but then when I call you once in a while and say, 'Hey, do you went to church? Do you took the kids to church? Are you going to enroll them for, for First Communion and confirmation and so on?'" And she just said, "I don't know."
We have a break coming in about 2 minutes, so if you don't mind my interruption, here's what I would propose. If you want to do this, what I would say to her is, look, this is a promise that as a godmother I would be making to you, to God, to the church, and to your children, that I'll do everything that's possible to help you raise your children Catholic. Now, if you're going to raise your children Protestant, I can't help you. If you want me to be their godmother, and if you want to be their godmother, if you're willing to undertake that responsibility, just let her know that, you know, the children, she needs to agree that the children will be raised Catholic and that you will be permitted to help her do that if it's necessary for you to help. Ideally, she should be the one who's doing it. Ideally, it would be her and her husband together, she and her husband together. But I would make it really clear and then see if she really wants you to do that and say, if that's not what you want, then I can't be the godmother. But if that's what you want, then I will do that. But you have to make a promise that you're going to stick with that. Give that a try and see what she says. And maybe who knows, maybe this will be the fork in the road where she's going to turn back to the practice of her Catholic faith. Wouldn't that be wonderful? Thank you, Jovita. I appreciate it. Jovita, excuse me. I'll be right back with more right after this. Now.